Working Cows Podcast, episode 110.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. Today, we are joined by Mary Jo Ehrman. Mary Jo Ehrman is author of Farming Without the Bank, as well as CEO of Fiscal Bridge LLC, and all of that means she is an IBC practitioner. And what do I mean by IBC practitioner? She is a proponent of and agent who ensures people using the infinite banking concept, a whole life, a properly structured whole life insurance policy. We're going to talk to her today about the excuses people come up with for not starting with IBC, a very useful tool for a cash flow strategy within a farm or ranch or any business. Really, there are a lot of different people using it different ways. But for now, let's talk to Mary Jo Ehrman about people's excuses for not getting started with Farming Without the Bank. Mary Jo, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. I really appreciate you taking the time, squeezing me in with all your busy travel and such. So I know it's been a busy time of year for you, but I wanted to talk to you today about getting started and the objections to it. What are you hearing from people that say it's not the right time, or I can't get started because of this roadblock? What are some of those common roadblocks that people are mentioning to you?
I'm too old. It's not going to work before I die. I'm too young. My farm's not big enough. I don't have enough cash. Prices are horrible right now, right? It's every doom and gloom thing that you can think of.
If somebody wasn't too young or too old, they would always be able to blame the market.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so even at, you know, it's, you're never, the only time you're really too old is if you are 85, because we can't do anything on you personally if you're 85. But gosh, you probably have a kid or a grandkid or a great grandkid or somebody, a business partner that you can put life insurance on. And so it doesn't matter if you're in your 70s. If you want to build something, you can always build it on the younger generation and you can leave it to them. I have clients that are 70. My oldest client was 77 when we issued the policy. And so obviously it has to make sense to do it on their life. So this mentality of all or nothing, we want to say we want to be out of the banking system before we die. So it's not going to work for me because I'm too old. Well, it's a start for the next generation. You're not too old, but we need to think about the next generation. So if you're in your 50s, and those are the people that I hear it from the most, are the people in their 50s and 60s. People in their 70s don't call me unless they really are optimistic, right? And they go, oh, well, I don't care how old I am because I'm not really old. They're mentally young, and so they don't feel like they're too old. And then you get the people on the opposite side that say, I'm only in my 20s, and I have a very small operation. Can I use this? And I just got that email the other day. I only have 40 acres. I only have 80 acres. And yes, you can use this. Absolutely. You're going to have more than one policy. And if you've listened to anything that Nelson Nash has talked about, he had 49 life insurance policies. He didn't really start till he was 52. So if that's the case and you're only in your 20s, we're going to have a lot of policies and we're just going to create new ones every time we have money because you're going to grow over your lifetime for your wealth. But it's a perfect, there's never a bad time to start. No, and then you get the objection of, Well, I don't have any money, or I have too much debt and I can't start. Really? Because if we really look at Nelson's book and we really pay attention to what Nelson was writing in there, he had $500,000 of debt at 23% interest in the 80s. So he didn't wait to get started. He found the idea, and he came upon the idea in the worst time of his life financially. And so that is when we look for a solution. That is not, if everything is going great, we don't ever need that solution. And what he doesn't tell us in the book is that he inherited another $300,000 of debt from a business partner who went bankrupt. So he actually had $800,000 of debt at 20 some percent interest in the 80s. So is it too bad for you today? If you think it is, sure. But if you want to look for a solution, there's a solution.
Absolutely. Yep. And that's what we're all about here on the Working Cows podcast. That's what you're all about with Farming Without the Bank and your podcast, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But I want to make sure on the front end, we mentioned the fact that you have a new podcast. I'm really excited for that and really appreciate some of the episodes that have come through already. So good stuff there. But continuing on down the road of these objections, do you think that some of the objections to infinite banking or farming without the bank are due to the fact that people don't understand the goal and the purpose of the strategy?
I think some of it is, but I think that most of it, Clay, is fear. That because if just because you don't understand it, what is the fear to learn more? Why are you too scared to read the book? Why are you too scared to look at the numbers and to meet with me? Right? Because the only thing that's going to stop you is yourself. And so I will not meet with clients if they've not read my book or if they've not read Nelson's book. It just isn't going to happen because there's so much to learn there in order to get us to the next step. And so, you know, I think it's just change. Like, some people embrace it. And the next guy is so scared that nobody else is doing it. And it's not the norm. So we can't do it, you know, and let's actually look at the norm. If you let me just step back a hair.
Go ahead.
Traditional, what we call today, traditional investing, traditional finance is the bank, 401ks, IRAs, Roth, the market, right? None of that really even happened. The market stuff, the investments didn't happen till the 80s. What makes them traditional? Really, if we look back, traditional is whole life insurance and annuities, which are still a life insurance product. That is where our pensions were put. That's where everything was. So we have this very narrow mind, this very narrow view, like we have blinders on, and we can't see the past.
Yeah. So I think a lot of what I talk about here on the Working Cows podcast is getting profit back into the industry and the fact that we should be ranching more like our grandparents did, ranching more like our great grandparents did, depending on what generation you're a part of. But I mean, in a lot of cases, our grandparents, my grandparents for sure, were some of the first to use machinery and in their farming and ranching operations, or my grandparents' generation for sure. And my great-grandparents were, if their generation was using machinery, they were certainly on the cutting edge of that. So there was a whole history of ranching in the world and in America before machinery existed. And they figured out how to raise calves and raise cows and harvest crops without all of these things. And so we should be trying to figure out how to match their ability to do that without these depreciating assets and without these different things that we've got piled on top of. And as Wally Olson said, we're asking that cow to carry that tractor around, and that's really heavy load for her because it's depreciating and she's depreciating and all these different things. And so we need to figure out how to ranch more like our grandparents, our great-grandparents did. And I think we also need to think about maybe banking more like our grandparents and our great-grandparents did.
Right. Because we didn't have a banking problem until 103 years ago. Before that, the Federal Reserve did not allow banks to lend to farmers. So they had to figure it out on their own. And then we really look at what happened in the 80s. The government came in and said, farm, fence row to fence row, go big or go home. And they pushed us that way. And now we really are, they have, if we really look at history of what happened to the farming industry, the government has sucked us in, right? And it's been this really slow quicksand of, here, let me give you some subsidies, and then let me give you some, disaster relief. And I'm not going to give you disaster relief unless you have crop insurance. And so, but the crop insurance is all part of the government. And can we really feel like we can't do it without them? Yet we can if we manage our finances and we prepare for those downturns. Is it going to be easy? Absolutely not. I never said it's going to be easy. It might take generations, but can we get away from that system that was created around us? Because that wasn't there 103 years ago.
Yep. And, you know, it's we lack credibility, I think, in a lot of cases to say we are conservative and we don't want government intervention in this area and that area, when we're also seem to be standing there with our hand out for a subsidy and disaster relief and crop insurance and all of these things. And you know, it's a, as you said, it's a relatively recent invention, and we should figure out a way to go without it if we can. And, you know, there are people who are doing it. And if Gabe Brown in Bismarck, North Dakota can do it, I think anybody can do it, because he's in one of the harsher environments in the world, and he's making it work without any subsidies, without any crop insurance. He's doing it. And so I think we need to find people who can be examples to us of making it work. Just like we were talking about before we started recording, you know, people say, I can't make that work. Well, people are making it work everywhere. You know, you are not in a harsher environment than some of the people who are making it work. So go for it. And you're not in a worse financial position than some people who have made farming without the bank work in the past. So go for it. Mm-hmm. So what about the objection on the other end? I'm too young. I don't have enough equity. What are some of those things that you're hearing from people? And how do you answer those objections?
Well, we don't need equity to start farming without the bank. We need cash flow. And when we don't have cash flow, we can't start. Now, I have people that come to me with lots of debt. And we just sit down and figure out, how are we going to get you out of this debt as fast as we can, so we can free up some cash flow to start, which is great. Not that doesn't happen often, but it happens. The bonus is they read in the book and they see in the book there's a different way, a different thought process around money and a different way to utilize money. So when we're utilizing it differently, we're freeing it up. We're understanding what we're doing. And that we just, if we don't know what our books are, which is usually the problem, and I just, on my podcast, I just had an interview with Michelle Patton about cash flow. And so if we know what our bookkeeping is and we have all those numbers, we know where our cash flow is. We know where we can start. And that it's, so it doesn't matter how much equity you have, because we're not borrowing money to start this process. We're really looking at it. We're really looking at what Nelson calls Parkinson's law. A luxury once enjoyed becomes a necessity. Do we, you know, Nelson didn't get rid of $800,000 of debt in 15 years because he was living a life of luxury. He really cut back to make sure that he could get as much as he could into policies, borrow it back out, and get rid of the bank. And now he just owed that debt to himself. So if we're going to keep up with the Joneses, we're never going to have money to do it. But if we can sacrifice a little bit and say, You know, and I'm not a huge proponent of any massive sacrificing because I like my coffee and I like my vacations and stuff too. But if we can cut back a little and say, we're going to find X amount of dollars to put into a policy that we can get started, is that going to benefit us long term? And we have access to 75% of the money we put there. And we have to get that out of our mind that this premium payment is a payment, right? It starts to act like a deposit. 75% of it is accessible in 7 to 10 days. Did we deposit money into something, or did we make a payment and it's gone forever?
A black hole.
Right. Yes.
And it's not a black hole. It's a giant, tall, shiny building in the middle of town because the banks always have the biggest buildings. Did you ever think about that? Did you ever wonder why that is?
Yep. Banks and hospitals.
Yeah.
And the banks use your money. So you deposit money into the bank and then they lend it to me. The banks do not create their own wealth. They're just redistributing yours. And so instead of that bank building, we're going to have the life insurance company be that bank, but it's going to act like a deposit. It's all terminology. A lot of times people will say, well, Mary Jo, I still have to pay myself back to the life insurance policy, right? So another objection of why I don't want IBC is because I'm still going to have to pay myself back. I don't want a payment. Is it a payment? Because if you borrow $10,000 and you put $10,000 and you repay $10,000, you now have $10,000 to borrow against. You made a deposit back into the savings account. So is it really a payment? It's all terminology. It's all thought process. We are taught to think it's bad. So it's bad. We need to educate ourselves. We need to change the way we're thinking about our money.
It's all a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. It's all an important way of changing your thinking. We're going to chase a rabbit for just a second. I had this thought the other day. I was driving around running some errands, and one of the errands I was running was dropping off things at the consignment store, clothes, bedding, that kind of stuff. And I was wondering, I'm like, okay, so the bank can take my deposit and they can loan out 10 times that amount because of fractional reserve banking, mm-hmm. right? Why are they allowed to do that, but the consignment store isn't? So the consignment store can't take the money that people are buying the clothes with, and they can't just keep 10% of my money that they sold my clothes, the money they got from selling my clothes. They can't just keep 10% of that on hand. They have to keep every dollar of it on hand, because when I come in to say I want my money, they have to be able to give it to me. Mm-hmm. The bank can't match every deposit they have on hand, because if everybody showed up and said, I want my money, they've only got, you know, whatever that is, if it's 10%. Right. Yeah. If it's, they've only got 10% of that on hand at any given time. And then why is it legal for the bank to do that, but it's not legal for the consignment store to do that? The consignment store owner, if they did that, would go to jail. Mm-hmm. if they took 90% of the revenue they got from selling my clothes and invested it and did that with everybody else's, and then everybody showed up at the store on the same day and said, I want my money, they would have a riot, and the person who owned that consignment store would go to jail.
Why? For a Ponzi scheme, right?
which is what the Federal Reserve is, mm-hmm. and what the fractional reserve banking system is. And so I think we think because it's been this way, it's always been this way, mm-hmm. and that's not the case. And kind of like you said, Nelson's the law that you mentioned, you know, a luxury once enjoyed becomes a necessity, you know, and that brings me back to another reason why farming without the bank and working cows are so intertwined in their thinking, because I know so many people in this Working Cows podcast universe, the regenerative agriculture space, the ranching for profit space, the holistic management space, who are driving a 1995 Suzuki Sidekick as their side-by-side that they paid $1,500 for instead of the 2015, 2019, or whatever that is, that they paid however much they paid for it. And you know, I could buy, you know, $20,000 for these side-by-sides. I could buy 10 of those Suzuki Sidekicks before I have to pay for one of those side-by-sides. And taking that extra $18,500 I have laying around because I didn't buy the side-by-side and investing it into IBC, there you go.
Right. But Clay, you have to pay taxes on that now because you didn't spend it. Right? Because we're buying the new Gator and we're buying the new Kawasaki or whatever it's going to be today. We're going to buy that so we can avoid taxes because we need to have an expense. So really we're choosing as a farmer, are we going to dislike the banker or do we dislike the IRS more? Who do we dislike more? Well, we dislike the IRS more. Instead of saying, thank God I made money this year that I can pay taxes, we say, no, we're going to give the banker interest and we're going to go buy something or we're going to finance something so that we can avoid the IRS. So now we have to answer to the banker instead of the IRS.
Yeah, our thinking is so intertwined. Because
and so I always say this, I'm just going to add this. I always say this, if you went down the strip, we have a strip here in Bismarck where John Deere is and, you know, Kubota I think is over there and whatever. I drive by it all the time. So
red, green, orange, yellow, yeah. Whatever.
It doesn't matter what color paint you have, right? If you drove by and they had a huge sign out front, 12, 15% discount on everything you buy today, would you stop in? And farmers don't think about this. Would you stop in and make that purchase? It's a 15% off everything. Most people would say, no, it's only 15%. It's not a big enough sale. But at the end of the year, if you're in a 15% tax bracket, that's all you're saving on that piece of equipment. The equipment dealers have a 15% sale. And it was funny because when I thought of that one day, I thought, well, am I right? Does it really work? Is it really that simple and it works that easily? And so I emailed the accountant just to make sure I wasn't going to say something that was not correct because my figures weren't right. And he said, yeah, that's right. He goes, but I've never thought of it that way. I'm like, that's exactly it. If you're in a 20% tax bracket, it's a 20% sale. You're in a 30% tax bracket, it's a 30% sale. But if we're trying to write, as a farmer, if we're trying to write off every red cent we can and get our income to a negative, we're in a 0 to 10% tax bracket, right? Or 15% tax bracket, whatever the tax brackets are right now. Is that really a big enough sale? Think about that. Right. Now, if you didn't go buy that piece of equipment because you were saying, I'm going to make this payment. I am willing to make this payment to John Deere, willing to make that payment to the bank or Case IH, whoever. If you're willing to make that payment to them, why aren't you willing to put that into a life insurance policy and get started? Pay the taxes on it and get started. Because now, as a 50 or 60-year-old or even a 40-year-old, now we can hand discounted dollars to the next generation and they can start rolling that money. And we have a system where we don't need the government. We don't need the bank. We can self-insure possibly in the second or third generation. Is that going to happen in your generation? No way. Not a chance is that going to happen. But it could possibly happen in that second or third generation, depending on what we're leaving for death benefit and the estate.
I was going to say another proof of the intertwined nature of the farming without the bank world and the working cows universe of thinking is that one of the first things I learned in the High Plains Ranch practicum was the statement by the biggest Caterpillar dealer in Wyoming. Now, Wyoming is coal country, large machines harvesting lots of coal, and this guy was the biggest Caterpillar dealer in Wyoming. And he said, I learned a long time ago, if it's not a good business decision, it's not a good tax decision. And he said, manage for tax problems. Manage to have to pay taxes because that means you made money, you know, and that is what we are after. We want to profit. We want to make money, and we want to be able to have more left over at the end of the year than we started with. And we want to have to pay taxes, I guess, if you know, that's the reality of the system that we're living in. We want to have to pay taxes. And so if it's not a good business decision, it's not a good tax decision. And so do you really need that? Is it really a good business decision to avoid those taxes? So that's a good rule of thumb, and I'm just basically restating something you already said. So it's just a cool community we're a part of, and I really appreciate that. So we don't need equity, we need cash flow. That's how you get started young. And so what are some of the exciting stories of people who have started young? We've already talked about your oldest client. What about some people who started young who are doing some exciting things with farming without the bank?
Oh, I'm super excited about, I have some clients in New York that are 24 and 26, and they're doing some organic dairy. And it was super exciting to me. And we started them as clients shortly before Nelson passed, and they read Nelson's book. They read my book. They read Nelson's book. By the time they got to me, I think they had read everything that they could read on the subject and really, really dived in, and he got it. So the husband's like, you know, we just put a huge amount of money to some debt. We need to pay ourselves back because that's what Nelson's talking about. And I said, yep, that's exactly what Nelson's talking about. And so it was fun because I got to email Nelson and say, hey, you would not believe, like, these are young people that get it from the second that they read your book. And he was absolutely thrilled to hear it. But then I come back to them in our second meeting and he says, well, you know, in the last 3 years, we've paid off $30,000 of debt. I need to pay myself back for all of that. So he creates an amortization schedule to pay himself back. And it's so exciting because he gets it and they know exactly what they're creating. And I was able to talk to them yesterday, and their first baby is due in November, and they're already like, how can we get started on the baby and have this policy on the baby? And a lot of times for young people, they're working off the farm and they have an off the farm job. That is a great opportunity to start, because now we have some income, some guaranteed income to start that policy. And we can sock a lot of money away, and we can always reduce premium later because the premium is very flexible. So we can always reduce that premium later, but let's get started while we have all that money so that we can position you to have something later. Or maybe we have an off the farm job and the young person is buying life insurance on mom and dad, because mom and dad are not taking responsibility for themselves and saying, we're going to buy life insurance to hand off to the kids. Instead, they say, no, Mary Jo's full of crap and we're not going to believe her and we don't want to learn any of this and whatever. So the young kid needs to take that responsibility, buy it on mom and dad and save it themselves, because mom and dad aren't saving it.
So at the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/110, there will be links to my previous episodes with Mary Jo and my episodes with Carlos Lara and Nelson Nash. I was privileged to be able to, thanks to Mary Jo for setting that up, to sit down with Nelson for just over an hour just before he passed away, and was really thankful for that. But when I talked to him for the first time, he was talking about writing a book or working on a book about kind of the Bible's perspective on money. And something you've brought up a couple of times has brought to mind a passage from Proverbs 13:22, says, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. And I think that is talking about the fact that I think the first part is pretty self-explanatory, and IBC fits well with that strategy of not thinking just about you, but thinking about freeing up the burden that will be on future generations, because we're just in this generational loop of passing off this burden of buying the ranch or the farm back from the bank every generation, and we can maybe break that cycle. So I think that's pretty self-explanatory about leaving an inheritance to your children's children, and how IBC fits into that. But it says the sinner's wealth is laid up to the righteous, and kind of the wisdom literature way of thinking about things is to be focused on this world rather than the next is kind of the sinner's way of thinking, looking at this world rather than eternity, or even thinking about your children's future and some of those things, being self-focused on your own things and the things of this world. And the people who are focused on the here and now and the things of this world tend to be overextended. And then when financial trouble hits, their place and all of their assets gets gobbled up by the neighbor who was responsible. And so I can see that fitting with the farming without the bank idea of people, you know, that are being responsible, that are maybe driving a sidekick rather than a side by side, or people who are maybe don't have the fanciest of everything. You know, they're being responsible and they have those assets for when the downturn comes, not if, because the nature of the Federal Reserve is to blow up bubbles and see them pop and deflate. And there's always this cycle of boom and bust, boom and bust. And we've talked about that before. But the people who are responsible are ready when the downturn happens to spring to action, and they've got the liquidity and the cash flow to make hay while the sun is shining, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually talked about this. I did an opinion article for the Successful Farming magazine, and I talked about the burden that you were talking about, that the suicide rates are so high amongst farmers right now. And this generation that's currently in charge of that farm is carrying that burden of mismanaged handoff, right? So nobody, we had to buy it and we had to buy it and we had to buy it. And they're carrying this burden that this is great grandpa or great great grandpa's operation, and they settled here and I'm losing it. And now I'm the loser and nobody's going to like me because I couldn't manage it. And so is the suicide coming from the fact that this generation doesn't have the money for it? Or is the deeper reason for that, that we truly feel like we are the loser because we couldn't carry that burden of 2-3 generations before that didn't want to hand it off correctly? Instead, you're supposed to fight like I did. Why do we all have to fight? And I draw this out a lot when I talk about borrowing money from or taking money out of a savings account. So if you imagine you save up and then you drain it to the zero line, and then you save up and you drain it to the zero line, and we only get so far and then we have to drain it, right? The farm is exactly the same way. The first generation comes and we build it, and then we essentially drain it because we have to buy it again. And then we build it and we drain it, and we never continue on. And how can we create a farm that is bigger and more prosperous and operating better if we constantly are having to start over with every generation? And I just accidentally happened to draw it out one day, and the visual was even powerful to me, that why do we keep doing that? And so if we can leave it to the next generation, and even maybe leave it so you can see while you're still alive what you've created. Nelson didn't die with 49 life insurance policies that he owned, because most of those were not going to be on his life. He was uninsurable because he had heart issues. So those were on business partners, on kids, on grandkids, on great-grandkids. Nelson passed those off. When I talked to him, this February, but I talked to him about a year and a half ago, and he said, I only own 11. 11 of the 49. He had only claimed on a couple, or one that I know of. So if that's the case, can you imagine what he got to see every day while he was alive? He handed these policies with money over to his kids, and he got to see the glory of what he built instead of saying, I'm going to control it all until the day I pass.
Good stuff. And we could talk all day. You and I have spent many hours on the phone different times. And one of my bonus episodes for my Patreon supporters was about an hour of you and I talking outside of an episode. So we could go on for a long time. One thing I just want to mention real quickly is that I think we're real close to another troubled time of, I know we're in it. I know that there are people that are feeling the pinch already, but we just saw an inversion in the yield curve the other day where short-term bonds were paying higher than long-term. And so that is usually a sign in the next 18 months that there's going to be some kind of a crash happening. Not to scare people, just to warn you that it's been a predictor every time. Mm-hmm. And so if people have heard us today and said, you know what, I'm going to stop making excuses. I'm going to get started where I am because that's the best place to start. When's the best place to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When's the next best time? Today. And so how do they get in touch with you? What do you want people to do to get started?
If you want to grab the book, you can go to farmingwithoutthebank.com. You can grab the book there. The other best place to just follow me is on Facebook. I don't do any kind of Twitter stuff. I'm kind of a Facebook geek. So if you want to go on Facebook, if you want to send me a private message there, it doesn't matter. I answer all of those. I don't have somebody else answering those. So you can go there or you can join in on the new podcast. Farming Without the Bank is the name of everything. So whatever you do, it's Farming Without the Bank on Facebook, on the podcast, on just your regular website, and you can get started there.
So anywhere you get your podcasts, you can get Farming Without the Bank as a podcast, and it's very good, very well done. It's an awesome podcast. I encourage people to go out and listen to it. Really appreciate the new podcast coming on. Just last week, we talked with Jason Meadows about his Ag State of Mind podcast. This week, we're talking to Mary Jo Ehrman about her Farming Without the Bank podcast. So really excited about those things. So anything else, any other last parting thoughts you want to share about not making excuses and getting started?
I don't think so. I think just open your mind. You know, Nelson always said he wasn't the hero. He would always give credit to me that I was ready and I was willing to learn. And so be ready, be willing to learn and be open-minded about it. Because if we think negatively, it is a proven fact that our brain will not find the solution. We can't even see a solution. So if we're open-minded and we're looking for things, we are going to find them.
This is no different than rotational grazing. You can convince yourself it won't work, and then you don't have to try very hard. But there are people everywhere making it work, and Farming Without the Bank is the same. IBC is the same. You can convince yourself all the reasons it won't work. But there are people everywhere in every stage of life, in every financial situation, making it work. And it's time. I think it's time to dive in and to try and make it work for yourself. Thank you, Mary Jo, for your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Very good stuff there. I really appreciate her heart. And don't forget to check out her podcast, workingcows.net/110 will be the show notes page for today. And there will be a link to Mary Jo's podcast. So make sure you go check out her Farming Without the Bank podcast. Very well done, very well produced, and very compelling information being shared there about people and how they're using the infinite banking concept to free up their control of their own money in their ranch and farm businesses. So workingcows.net/110 will be a link in the show notes page to Mary Jo's new podcast at the show notes page for today. So looking forward to next week with Mark Tagg of Ag Boost, a service that is providing visualizations for people to help them interpret their genetic testing result information from their cow herd. So tune in next week for an episode with Mark Tagg of Ag Boost on episode 111 of the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.